to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome to the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program, Saturday, April 13th. It's going to be another busy night in the cesspool. I hope you are ready to hang on for dear life. James Edwards, Keith Alexander in our Memphis studio, our flagship radio station here. And listen, another week of good news. Last week was good news. Today, good news. Great day, by the way, if I can just start thinking. Probably the most beautiful, pleasant day of the year. I was out all day in the yard with my wife and daughter, and my head looks like a sun-ripened tomato as I made it into the station tonight. I came in early. You know, we mentioned last week that we're going to be unveiling a new website that we're very excited about. Of course, the address will still be the same, thepoliticalcesspool.org. We're going to have some new features, bells and whistles, new look, new pictures, new videos. There's nothing wrong with the website it is now. In fact, I love it. It's easily navigable, but we just need a fresh look, you know, to show people, hey, we're not laying complacent. We're not resting on our past laurels and accomplishment. Always want to keep things fresh. We're going to have a new website and some new bumper music forthcoming. I actually got to the station about an hour early tonight and was forwarding over the stuff that Art had produced. We might unveil that as early as next week. Our target date was the first show in the month of May, but the website and the new music, the new spots, could be unveiled as early as next week. So stay tuned for that, folks. You all made it happen, of course, with your contributions to the show so far this year. Raising money for the website refreshing was something that we were aiming for, and it has been accomplished. And by the way, speaking of all of those who contributed last month during our first quarter fundraising drive, you know, if you contributed at a certain level, you were going to get the Best of Bill Roland CD. If you contributed at a higher level, you get the CD plus an autographed copy of the book Southern by the Grace of God by noted Southern author Michael Andrew Grissom. Well, let me tell you, both of those items are in the mail. So if you contributed last month at the appropriate levels, you are going to have one or both of those incentives en route to you right now. I spent a couple of days signing thank you notes earlier this week, and I got everything packaged, and it has been taken to the post office, and they're on their way around the world, Keith, all across the country and into different ports of calls in Europe and Australia, Canada, wherever our listeners may be that contributed. They will be getting a couple of great gifts, folks, and let me tell you, I hope you enjoy it. That Best of Bill Roland CD contains 10 hours. It's an MP3 disc. Contains 10 hours of just the most incredible interviews and commentaries that Bill delivered over the course of the last 9 years. You're really going to enjoy that. And don't forget that in addition to helping keep us on the air with your contributions, we were able to make a very generous gift of benevolence on behalf of the audience to Bill's family, the wife and children he left behind. So you're helping everybody. We kicked back a little bit to the network a couple of days ago. We spread the love and spread the wealth, such as it is. No, well, we don't spread it to we spread it to everyone but ourselves. Yeah, Keith hasn't gotten anything. No, you know, it might seem that we should get something for our efforts, but no, we don't do that. Well, speaking of that, Keith, you know, there's been a couple of times in my life where I had the opportunity to maybe cash in or take a shortcut. I remember when I ran for office in 2002, I started to make a little noise, was getting, about 20-25% of the vote. Keep in mind, this is me running as a 22-year-old independent against the Speaker of the House and a third participant. It was a three-way race. And one of the leaders of the Republican Party came to me, I think it was in August, right before the November vote. He said, listen, now, if you just back off and you come into the Republican Party, you know, we will work with you and we will groom you. And maybe you'll have a chance to run and win. And, of course, I didn't take that. And, of course, I've never won office. A couple of years later, after the radio show, never voted for a winning candidate, including myself. A couple of years later, once the radio show started, a couple of radio hosts here in Memphis said, if you just stop talking about this stuff that you talk about, it was Chuck and Larry Bates were their names, said, you know, you can come on our network and you'll have a real audience. Well, we didn't take that one either. We've built an audience despite it all. Didn't take that one. Just this week, you haven't even heard this one yet because it happened after we had lunch this week. Horseshoe Casino, the Horseshoe Casino, contacted us through the media department of the cesspool and wanted to advertise with us. Now, can you believe that? A couple of years ago, you know, Warner Brothers asked if they could work with us, if we would work with them, rather, to promote Gods and Generals, and that was something we believed in, and so we did. But the Horseshoe Casino wanted to run ads on our website. And, you know, like I said, I've got, maybe I should wear a sign. I don't know if it should say not for sale or born to lose, one of the two. But I turned them down. I really, you know, it wasn't a lot of money they were offering. You know, you think Horseshoe Casino, man, that was our ticket. Well, they were offering about $1,000. They wanted to advertise for a couple of months, $1,000. And I didn't do it because I just don't believe that. I don't believe that casinos are good for our people. I don't think it's healthy, you know, to go down there and lose money, which you would inevitably do. Old-fashioned, maybe. Nothing wrong with the casinos. I say there's nothing wrong with it. Obviously, I think that there is, or we would have taken their money. I mean, but I've been to casinos before. I'm not a Puritan. My grandmother and I would go from time to time and have, you know, the buffets down there. So, I don't know. Didn't do it. Principled to a fault, I guess. But I'll let you make sense of that. But I got one more thing to say, Keith, in terms of the good news, and we're covering a lot of good news. We're going to get down to content in just a minute. But heard on the radio today, after all of that, you know, we got all these gifts mailed out, had a successful fundraising drive last month. Heard on the radio, Paul McCartney's coming to town. I mean, you know, so now if they'd have said Frankie Valli was coming to town, Keith would still be trying to revive me with the smelling salts. But Paul McCartney, not too shabby, might go to that. The original Beatle coming to Memphis here. So you're going to have the cesspool and Paul McCartney doing shows on the same night. I wonder which one's going to get more audience. But anyway, Keith, that's the news of the week to start things off tonight.
Well, McCartney by himself is a little too saccharine for my taste. As much as I hate to admit it, I think that John Lennon added something to the duo as far as the songwriting and the performing, even though Lennon was appropriately named, in my opinion. Let me tell you, I wish I'd known about the Horseshoe Casino thing, because I actually was behind enemy lines. I was working for Holiday Inn when the Jewish takeover happened. There was a Jewish guy named Roy Weingartner, who was the largest franchisee in the Holiday Inn system. Holiday Inn, at that time at corporate headquarters, was run by a bunch of fundamentalist Christians. Kemmons Wilson, Wallace E. Johnson, who had BOMA Corporation, B-O-M-A-H, Builders of Men and Homes. He was kind of like the Levitt of the South. Back after World War II, Levitt was a Jewish guy that built the Levittown subdivisions on Long Island and outside of Philadelphia and whatnot. Little typical suburban houses for returning veterans. Excuse me. And that's exactly what Wallace Johnson did in Memphis and in Jackson, Tennessee, and other places like that. He was kind of the equivalent. But what I found out when I was there, I was wondering what was going on. And James is telling me I'm going to have to wait until after the break to tell you exactly what was behind the Jewish takeover of Holiday Inn. If you're interested, stay tuned after these words from our sponsor.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten a free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly, 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
We had so many announcements to make at the top of the show. We haven't really gotten into content. Keith was attempting to do that, and then we ran into the commercial break. We're going to let Keith finish his thought that he was making at the tail end of that opening segment, and then we're going to get into what happened at the American Renaissance Conference last week. Pretty interesting stuff.
Let me warn the listeners, this is totally extemporaneous. This is just like the old TV series called Naked City back in the 50s, where they played this ominous music and said there are a million stories in the Naked City, and this is one of them. Well, this is one of them I actually lived through. I was there when the Jewish head franchisee, the head of the franchisee organization at Holiday Inn, a gentleman by the name of Roy Weingartner, basically led a palace coup and booted out all of the old fundamentalist Christian leadership, Kemmons Wilson, Wallace E. Johnson, and everybody else that worked in the old regime from Holiday Inn. And I'm going to tell you how it happened, why it happened, and what the results of it were. It happened because of the energy crisis in the early to mid 1970s. That was the opportunity. That was the opening that Weingartner had been looking for. He mobilized all of the franchisees, and the franchisees were the people that actually ran the hotels and motels for Holiday Inn. Some were big shots, some were mom-and-pop operations, but if you'll recall, Holiday Inn arose out of Kemmons Wilson's ill-fated across-country trip with his rather large family. He and his wife, I think, had 7 or 8 children. He found out that there were no discounts for children, that a nice, spanking new motel might be part of the hot sheets trade. You didn't know the town, so you had to go off-site to find restaurants, and the restaurants didn't give you any discount for the children. And he decided that they could do better, and he had a very family-friendly approach. He was going to put all of these things that the family needed so they could just stay at a one location, a Holiday Inn that had a restaurant on site, had a swimming pool so that the kids could be entertained, had ice machines, had telephone, had air conditioning, which back then in the early 50s was, you know, something you couldn't depend on. So he had this standardization, and it sold like hotcakes. Holiday Inn went from being a little small startup to probably the top motel hotel chain in the world, at least by the end of the 60s. Then came the gas crisis, the gas shortage, where gas prices jumped up and Weingartner and the franchisees were feeling the pinch, and Weingartner, as the head, led the palace coup and deposed all the old fundamentalist Christian leadership. Now, Weingartner was kind of off the boat. He was educated in the school of hard knocks, wasn't particularly polished, but he was a ruthless businessman. Now, he had a Jewish protege named Mike Rose, who was the polished version of Roy Weingartner. He had gone to Harvard. He was 6'7". He had all the style and grace that they were looking for. So he was being groomed to be the head of Holiday Inn. Now, why did Roy Weingartner do this? And what was the goal of it? And how did it end up? Weingartner had been alerted by his friends via Jewish networking that gambling was suddenly going to become big business. It was going to be legalized well beyond Nevada, which was the only place where it was legal in the United States at the time, except for dog tracks and a few things like that, a few horse racing tracks. We're talking about casino gambling. So I was there when they, when Weingartner and his bunch took over and made all the old fundamentalist Christian leadership walk the plank. And, you know, it was probably took a couple of years, but basically they shook all the old people out. I was part of the new crew. Didn't know it at the time, but I was. And the reason they were doing this, James, they wanted to sell. They had no affinity for this family-friendly operation that Holiday Inns had traditionally been. They sold off all the assets so that when Bass, the people that have Bass Ale, you know, in England, bought the actual Holiday Inn assets, there was no money exchanged. It was basically just accepting debt because Weingartner, Rose, and their leadership had leveraged the thing up to the eyeballs. They'd gotten all the juice out of the lemon that they could. And the reason they did that was to get into gambling. They bought, first of all, like a 10% share in the Riverboat Casino in Las Vegas, just so they could learn the ropes. This was what they called a grind operation, small stakes gambling at the Riverboat. Then, probably about a year later, they bought Harrah's. I was out there for the closing. It was a big deal. And they got all the money out of selling the assets off and put them into what they called, euphemistically, the hospitality industry. Now, they bought Perkins Restaurants as kind of a cover, but basically they got all this money, they got this cash cow and slaughtered it called Holiday Inn to put money into the acquisition of Harrah's and the operation of a gambling casino. And they had them in New Jersey. They had them all over the place. You see, you know, we even got it right down the road in Mississippi now, in Tunica County. Now, they knew that, see, this is the difference between the Jewish leadership and the fundamentalist Christian leadership. Kemmons Wilson, Wallace Johnson, and people of that ilk would never have allowed Holiday Inns to have anything to do, and they would have had nothing to do with gambling because they considered gambling to be a sin. They considered it to be destructive of families and the fabric of society. And, of course, Weingartner and his ilk had no such reservations or trepidations about it. So that's just one little morality tale that your little comment brought to mind.
You know, Keith, while you were chasing that rabbit, I began to wonder how we got on that track to begin with, but it was because of the fact that I mentioned in the first segment that Horseshoe had contacted me. We turned them down. You know, $1,000 to me might as well be, you know, 10,000. It's a lot of money, and it would go a long way in keeping this show financially afloat and on solid ground, and we need it. God knows we need it. We didn't turn it down because we got more money than we need, but it just it didn't seem right. And so, you know, we've always taken, that's always been our litmus test. Is it right? Is it good for our people or not? So Anyway, but I appreciate that story. Again, extemporaneous, as you mentioned, and we never follow a script here on the cesspool, but that was informative, and I'm sure the people enjoyed it. Well, the first thing we had intended to talk about, we will now cover 30 minutes into the show, and I know we're coming up on a break, so I'll just mention it quickly, and then we'll dig a little more deeply into it. Got a lot of emails this week, Keith. A lot of people disappointed that we were not at the American Renaissance Conference. Of course, we mentioned last week that our broadcast schedule, our live production schedule, and the keynote dinner banquet of Amarin prevented us from doing the two simultaneously on site at the conference last week. But nevertheless, apparently, according from the emails I've gotten, everybody showed up at Amarin to get a glimpse of us, if the inbox is any indication. Of course, that's not entirely true. Everybody went there because Amarin's a great event, and they were mentally and spiritually fed there. But a lot of people did keep an eye peeled for us, and apparently we disappointed. Our heartfelt apologies for that, folks, but work intruded down here in Memphis. Anyway, I'm bringing up Amarin again this week because of the protests that it endured and the kind of protests that they were and the kind of protesters that it attracted. Vulgar, obscene in appearance and in rhetoric, folks. Threats of violence, threats of genocide. Now, this is the peace and tolerance crowd. We'll tell you what they did when we come back.
Don't go away. The political cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Again, listen, I understand that our audience made up a significant portion of the attendees of last week's American Renaissance Conference. I thank you for supporting Jared's good work, and rest assured that you had a wonderfully stimulating experience. It just didn't make sense for us to go up when we had to do the show and to have done it live there while everyone was in the banquet. We'd have been doing it with each other, and we could have done it here. Well, we would have liked to have seen everybody, though, and I know we had a lot of fans up there. But the protesters, you know, last year I spoke at American Renaissance, and there were no protesters. This year, a few of them made the trip. And even the local news report of the Tennessean, which is the Nashville major newspaper, quoted it as being only a handful, which truly it was. There were four people there when the news crew was there. I hear at their zenith about a dozen folks were there protesting the event. You know, there were more organizations. I was reading all of this hyperbole in advance of the meeting of all of these organizations that were going to come together and protest, you know, the freedom of speech and freedom of association that conservative white folks have. You know, that's evil. That's racist for conservative white folks to have freedom of speech and association. So they were going to protest that. I think it was about 15 different organizations that had pledged to come together. They're going to fight the good fight. And at the end of it all, there was about 12 people. There were more organizations represented than there were people. So you explain that. But anyway, at the end of it all, a handful of protesters picketed the American Renaissance Conference last weekend at Montgomery Bell State Park and Conference Center near Nashville, and it was the scum of the earth. The park rangers had to stand to keep the peace, not of the attendees, of course, but from the rabble that were there. The rangers had to keep warning them not to use profanity and using their middle finger to make gestures. Nathaniel Berman, who, according to this story, is a Jewish cantor at a Nashville temple, and his spouse represented the so-called anti-Nazi Klan coalition. "We don't want this white trash in our state," Berman exclaimed over a bullhorn, and the story continues. But, you know, Keith, for these people, they do not differentiate between conservative, racist, white person, Klansman, Nazi, anti-Semite, they're all interchangeable adjectives as far as the left is concerned. And let me tell you, folks, they had cardboard signs there that included their usual death threats. You know, I have never in my life, Keith, nor do I know of anyone who ever has, attended a rally to protest a left-wing group's freedom to speak or associate or assemble. I have never heard of a person that listens to my show or supports my work going and protesting the right of the NAACP or La Raza or any of these left-wing, anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-white groups. I don't know of anyone who's ever gone and wasted their time trying to keep them from having the ability to get together. As much as we oppose their message, we don't do that. But certainly, in addition to that, we don't carry signs the likes of which that these people did. They had cardboard death threats, scribbled statements that read, "Repeat Dresden," which we all know in World War II, the Allied bombers firebombed the city of Dresden, killing man. It was a non-military city, killing man, woman, and child. You know, I guess that was a carryover from Sherman. That was, you know, his precedent being continued. One of the protesters had a cardboard sign, had an AK-47 drawn, illustrated on the sign with words under it reading, "This machine kills racists." And these pictures were shown in the local paper and on the news. "This machine kills racists. Repeat Dresden. Remember Stalingrad," whatever that's supposed to mean. And again, as a friend of mine wrote earlier this week, it goes without saying that if anyone supposedly on our side, and I say again that our side doesn't behave this way, but if anyone supposedly on our side ever showed up at an African-American civil rights meeting with signs reading "Repeat Auschwitz" and showed a gun described as the cure for black people, there would be sustained howls of self-righteous rage from the media, as well as probable investigations by the FBI and the Justice Department. But you know, again, we don't act this way. They do. We don't try to shut them down. We don't threaten their lives. We don't intimidate venues that host them. But they do. All because a group meets that are proud of their cultural heritage, as Ameren is, and they seek to talk about it. You know, it's a sad day when you can be proud, and you have the right to be proud, and the media backs you up in your pride of being a lesbian or a pervert. You can be proud to be a pervert. You can't be proud to be a white conservative or a white Christian or a white heterosexual. But, you know, as Sam Dixon once mentioned, is the point of all that. And I'll get back to that after you have a word, Keith, on not so much the conference. We know it was a success. It was done in good taste. It always is, always has been. And the reason I bring up Ameren again this week is because of the protesters, their tactics, their rhetorics. And folks, go to our website and get a load of what they looked like. Get a load of what these people looked like. And Keith, you can further elaborate.
Not only go to our website, go to Ameren's website and read the comments on their blog roll. It's incredible. These people lived down to every stereotype you have about this so-called anti-fascist left, this hard left, this kind of the spiritual ancestors of SDS Weatherman. In fact, some of them were wearing SDS Weatherman t-shirts at this event. They were chanting, "Ameren, Ameren, rich and rude, we don't like your attitude." Well, you know, if I guess middle-class people look rich compared to these scruffy street people that they had protesting the Ameren conference. And furthermore, they had a male there. Out of the four people they had, one was a male who was emaciated and had track marks all up and down both arms, so he was obviously a drug addict who was injecting himself intravenously. And then they had a woman whose face was festooned with herpes sores. So these are really people from the top dresser drawer, as your grandmother used to say, James.
And if you compare and contrast that to the attendees of Ameren, of course, we've been, Keith, I spoke last year and had attended them prior to being an invited speaker, but people that go to Ameren conferences are business professionals. You're talking about doctors, lawyers, academics, intellectuals, so on and so forth. People who go out and work for a living and provide in a major way, they are contributing members of a society, solid citizens. And again, as Sam Dixon once told me, the campaign of harassment and persecution conducted against this meeting and others like it is vivid confirmation of the fact that, contrary to what they claim, the so-called peace and tolerant crowd, our enemies do not represent and have never represented freedom, civil liberties, the marketplace of ideas, and all the other virtues that they constantly claim for themselves. This is now standard operating procedure for the minority racist and white liberal coalition and the establishment it controls. These coming togethers, and you know, Keith, again, the threatening of violence, and they call, it's not just that they intimidate venues, they seek to shut down these people, and as we witnessed in 2008, financially harm people. It's not just that, but then you've got these threats of violence, and they go so far, their rhetoric against American Renaissance is absolutely reckless at best. They say American Renaissance is a terrorist organization. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. American Renaissance is a scientific journal. It's a magazine. It's not even an organization. It's a magazine founded by Jared Taylor, a graduate of Yale University. Anyone who wants to come to the American Renaissance conferences can come as long as they pay the registration fee, which is nominal, I think $100. And then you got to pay to, you know, stay the night at the hotel, wherever. It's not an organization at all that one would join. It's a magazine that holds annual conferences for its subscribers. But they say it's a terrorist organization. It's a Klan organization. It's an anti-Semitic organization. If anything, American Renaissance has sustained some criticism because it is so friendly towards, I say, the Sons of Israel. Not that it's friendly towards them, but that it doesn't identify the role that many Jews have played in the advancement of liberalism and the triumph of liberalism. Certainly, if any, you know, we've had a lot of Jews on this show. If people agree with us, we want to work with them. We want to talk to them. But if anything, Ameren sustained criticism for their stance towards Israel, towards Jewish people and intellectuals. Not that it's an anti-Semitic terrorist organization, as these people would claim. I mean, it's absolute madness, Keith, but they say whatever they want. All of the adjectives are interchangeable. Klansmen, Nazi, they don't care. They just throw it all out there because they disagree with them. And this is behavior the likes of which our side has never reduced itself to.
Yeah, the left has this one-size-fits-all diatribe that they use against anyone that they perceive as being opposition. I'm sure they use the same adjectives to describe Tony Perkins' Family Research Council and James Dobson's Focus on the Family. And what you said about Amran is absolutely correct. In fact, Jared Taylor, I understand, was somewhat upset because I featured the role of, or didn't feature, but at least I mentioned the role of Jewish power and influence in the triumph of liberalism when I spoke at the Council of Conservative Citizens last year. So that has to be probably the most laughable charge of all, that they're anti-Semitic, Jane.
Absolutely right, Keith. And we'll be back with more right after this. Stay tuned, everybody.
If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. There's a better life for me.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R-word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items for my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Again, bringing up the American Renaissance Conference because of, you know, again, thanks goes to the park rangers who were keeping the attendees safe from the peace and tolerant protesters who were threatening violence. And, you know, when I say they intimidate venues, I'm not talking about the fact that they just call the venue and say their usual lies that you're going to have a Nazi Klan such and such rally at your hotel. You need to cancel that. They will call and threaten to blow up the hotel and kill the management of the hotel. You think I'm joking? The last public conference that I organized was in 2008, and that is exactly what happened. It happened so much that the general manager of the hotel resigned out of fear of his own death and the safety of his wife and children. This is the peace and tolerance left. What they claim for themselves, they don't afford for others. We're going to play a quick clip here, and then we're going to go to another story. But Ramsey Paul, just to cap it all off, Ramsey Paul offers an interesting commentary as to what took place last weekend with the protesters. You're going to hear it now.
With your generosity, it was probably the most memorable weekend I have ever had. And just to clear up a point, AMRAN is not part of the Klan. In fact, it's not even an organization like that. It's just a magazine that's a website now, and they have conferences, and anyone that pays their fee can attend. It's not a group that people join. At the conference, I sat next to an Asian lady, and I had breakfast with a Jew, and then I went out drinking with a Puerto Rican guy. AMRAN was actually more racially diverse than the protesters. So let me tell you the first day when I spoke. The first guy that spoke talked about World War II fighter pilot heroes. The second topic was a Jewish professor, and he explained income versus education level and talked about how outsourcing affected that all. And I was getting nervous because my topic, I started out with a joke about drinking, which led to a joke about premature ejaculation, which ended up with a joke about abortion. Yeah, I tell my jokes in a logical sequence. Anyway, the SPLC wrote a rambling review of my speech, which I'll link. They said I was vulgar and offensive. I took that as a compliment. That's kind of my sweet zone. And SPLC, if you're watching, have you ever tried to do a set 11 a.m. when everyone's sober? It's not that easy. And then they try to compliment me saying I was like the second most influential white nationalist type on the internet, which is interesting because I don't even support a 100% pure ethnostate. I don't care who's having sex with who, and I kind of like Jews and people of other races. So see, it's a dangerous type of white nationalist I am, the new breed. So I like all races, even though I joke about them, but I think the SPLC really jumped the shark when they were offended about a joke, and they put the scare quotes around the word joke that I made about white supremacists and the KKK. And the joke just went like this, because I knew there's an SPLC agent in the audience, and I said, hey, how do you tell if a white supremacist is agreeing with you? He says, K, K, K. Yes, the SPLC objected to me making fun of the KKK and white supremacists. So if any white supremacist or KKK members watching, I'm really sorry if I offended you. Oh, a quick note, I did receive another speaking invitation. It's for a Jewish group in New York City. All right, see you guys later. Oh, one last thing. Those of you that were in that late night country bar, you guys know what happened after we were singing Dixie.
Okay, and we're back. So that's Ramsey Paul giving a little bit of explanation as to what went on at the American Renaissance Conference. You can catch the entire video at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. But keep the final word on that. And then there's one more story I got to cover that's completely unrelated, but I want to work it in before we move on with the second and third hour tonight.
Well, James, the protesters just confirmed what we often say here at the Cesspool, which is that liberalism sails under false colors. They pretend to be about benevolence and tolerance and trying to help certain groups of people, when actually their entire animus is driven by envy and resentment against other people. they aren't pro-black, they're anti-white. They're not pro-Jewish, they're anti-Christian. They are not pro-woman, they're anti-male. They're not pro-immigrant so much as they are anti-founding stock of America. All of these things, you know, everything that you can say about them, you know, they are really the haters that they accuse everyone else of being.
Okay, there's one more story, Keith, that I want to cover, and that pretty much says it all, folks. You can get the rest of the story on the Ameren fallout from their website or ours. But here's a story that beats anything I've ever seen, I think, this year. You know, we can't pray in schools anymore. God's been taken out of schools. You can't pray. Ten Commandments can't be posted in the school because it's just so evil to oppress, you know, non-Christians like that and to subject them to such torture. So you can't pray. You can't, you know, read the Bible in school. None of that stuff. But apparently you can have a play in a public school in Massachusetts that mocks the Bible and laughs, or rather promotes, bestiality. Here's the scoop. Students from the Pioneer Valley Public School, which serves 400 pupils, grades 7 through 12 in Massachusetts, on March 15th through the 17th of this year, performed the controversial play The Most Fabulous Story Ever Told. It's a comedy that had run in New York. It alters the biblical book of Genesis to include homosexual couples Adam and Steve and Jane and Mabel in the Garden of Eden, as well as quote-unquote horny rhinoceroses that try to seduce men on the ark with their horn, you know what that's about, and Mary, the mother of Christ, except the reason she can't be pregnant was that she was a lesbian. This, Keith, played in a public school. It was played by the students of that school. We're talking about seventh graders mocking the story of Genesis, gay people on the ark, homosexual, sodomites. I mean, let's not use their words. Gay means happy. Sodomites. Rhinoceroses that are pleasuring Noah with his horn. Mary is portrayed as a lesbian in this. And so it's interesting to me that progressives hold the opinion that blasphemous and abominable art, such as this play, serves as a tool to make people think and talk and consider to be challenged. Yet I wonder if they would similarly defend our radio program in such a way. It's a rhetorical question, I know, but this is what they said. People defended this play. The school administrators defended this play. They said that's what art is. Art serves as a tool to make people think and talk, to consider and be challenged. All right, so Keith, that's it. I mean, public school in Massachusetts, seventh graders doing this kind of stuff. Mocking the Bible, making the biblical characters into homosexual men and women, and, you know, the rhinoceros is going around pleasuring them with his horn. This was a play, seventh graders, Keith.
And I can't help but make this note. I was reading this article for the first time, and I saw that it was a play written by one Paul Rudnick. I'll give you three guesses as to what type of name Rudnick is, and the first two don't count. You know, this is the source. This is what we said, Jewish power and influence. Rudnick is a Jewish name, by the way, if you don't know. So consequently, again, Jews are in the vanguard of liberalism, and the triumph of liberalism would have been impossible without their wealth, their media control, their intelligence, their organizational skills, and their incredible, tireless zeal at attacking the founding stock of America, James, and this is just another way to do it, you know, and it is absolutely incredible. I don't think people that lived 20 years ago would think they would see something like this play being performed in a public school without, you know, protests, you know, over the top.
And it made a little bit of local news, enough to where we could pick up on it. WorldNet Daily did a story about it, but this wasn't a national news story. I mean, this wasn't something that everybody was talking about. And it doesn't end there. I mean, you got a story out of where was this church? It doesn't say. It just says a church in America's heartland that they had redefined the birth of Jesus, the nativity story, featuring two women as the parents of Jesus Christ instead of a woman and man playing Mary and Joseph. It said, the reason they did it is because the Reverend Linda Butler. I mean, I don't believe in women being ministers. I don't believe in women being the heads of church. But they said the baby that played Jesus in this living nativity, he came from a lesbian couple. It was the baby that played Jesus had two mothers. So they didn't want to discriminate against the parents of the child since they were both lesbians. You know, I wonder how they actually had the kid. I mean, that's interesting. If that's truly, you know, obviously it's not their kid. They're lesbians. They can't have kids. But because the baby has two mothers, they let the two mothers play Mary and Joseph. So the one woman was dressed as Joseph. And this is a Christian church allowing this kind of stuff. And when we talk about a public school, that's bad enough. Christian church is doing this, a so-called Christian church.
And people wonder why the Christian church is dying and why so many of these magnificent edifices are going up for sale. This is what has happened. And by the way, as one of our listeners told us recently, there's no prohibition against gay people marrying. A gay man can marry a lesbian anytime he wants, and a lesbian can marry a gay man, right?
Well, that's it, Keith. The church said they were playing the role of the Holy Family, not Mary and Joseph. We don't refer to the moms as Mary and Joseph. We refer to them as the Holy Family. So that solves it all. Anyway, first hour down, two to go. We're back with more right after this. Good Lord.
Hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the